TomDispatch.com. This is TomCast. Interviews and insight from Tom Dispatch contributors for anyone seeking a deeper understanding of our post 9/11 world and a clear sense of how our global imperial system actually works. I'm Timothy McBain. Recently, I had the pleasure of speaking with author, educator, and activist Frances Fox Piven. We spoke about her latest book, her reaction to Occupy Wall Street, and Glenn Beck's unhealthy obsession with her work and that of her late husband, Richard Cloward.
My new book, which has the very cute title, Who's Afraid of Frances Fox Piven, which reflects the fact that for over 2 years, actually, I have been a favorite target of Glenn Beck, both when he was on television, when he was on Fox News, and always in his blog called The Blaze. I at first didn't know about, you know, my celebrity on the Glenn Beck show, and I found out about it after a couple of people who were right-wing operatives in Michigan, but pretended to be students, called me up, said they wanted to do an interview, and I had been injured in a car crash, so I invited them to my home, and within a few days, clips from that interview were on YouTube. I think they were on Andy Breitbart's blog, and they were on The Blaze, I believe. But my students picked this up, and they quickly picked up Glenn Beck's big chalkboard chart of how revolution had really seeped into the veins of America. And in that chart, I was with my longtime writing collaborator and husband, Richard Cloward. I was on the trunk. It was the trunk of the tree, which was the tree of sort of the pollution of America by the left. The trunk of the tree was the Cloward-Piven strategy. And one branch went to SDS, another branch went to George Soros, another branch went to Acorn. One went to the financial crisis that began in 2008, the election of Barack Obama. This tree had many branches, and the branches were all of the sort of hated icons of the American right. My students thought that was very funny, that there was this big chalkboard diagram, which Glenn Beck used a pointer to discuss, and it was featured repeatedly on the Glenn Beck show. And I put it on my door. Oh, no, they put it on my door, and I saw it when I came back to work after I had recovered. Then I slowly realized how many times I had been featured on the Glenn Beck show and was continuing to be featured on the Glenn Beck show. Well, the new press people picked this up. They actually asked me to come down to a board meeting and tell the story. I told it like a funny story because it was still kind of funny to me. And the new press thought it would be good to take advantage of all the publicity that my work was getting as a result of the right-wing preoccupation with this crazy theory that Richard and I had been responsible for all these developments. And so they decided to put together, they asked me, I thought it was okay, if they could put together a collection of my work, and especially the work that had been singled out by Glenn Beck, which actually was an article published in The Nation in 1966, and it was a call for advocates, social workers, community organizers, poor people, to claim their full benefits under the welfare system. It was not a blueprint for collapsing America, as Glenn Beck described it.
Well, I was going to ask, do you think the reason that he's latched onto this so strongly, is it a lack of understanding of what you were actually saying, or just does he understand it and just harshly disagree?
Well, he sort of understands it and harshly disagrees. I don't know how deep the man's mind is, but, well, you know, it's funny, but the Tea Party types are actually lunatic. I mean, mobs of them descended on this little college where I spoke in central Pennsylvania about 10 days ago. There were threats. Oh, they had to have guards. They're nuts. I have gotten hundreds and hundreds of lurid death threats from these characters, who I think are probably pretty old and pretty lazy and are sitting in front of their computer in their rec room, and their imagination is taking off. And who's their target? Little old me. Nonsensical, but also too weird not to make you shiver. Oh, by the way, I now know. No, it's not that I know. I have a new theory about why they singled me out, or why people got excited about it, people on the right. And because at first I thought, well, you know, I'm an old lady. Isn't it bad to attack old ladies? Don't they think it's bad to attack old ladies? And I never had an answer to that question. I thought it was a little odd. But my experience at Messiah College, with crowds of these people yelling at me, I finally realized an important part of it is that they think I'm a witch. And witches are old ladies. And there's language that they use. They say, "Where's my broomstick?" They call me a hag or a hippie, which also is sort of magical. And witches, this doesn't go back to the Red Scare of the 1920s or the 1950s. They go back to the Inquisition. Witches eat plump Christian babies, and they can make anything happen. That's the abacadabra part of it. That tree, I can make anything happen. You better watch out. Glenn Beck, he was pointed in this direction by a little group of neocons who really came from the same period that the article was written. They, excepting in the late 1960s, most of them were people on the left, like David Horowitz or Jim Sleeper or Fred Siegel. These were people who had made a kind of crossing from the left. David Horowitz was an editor of a left-wing magazine called Ramparts. And they had become, by the early 1970s, neocons, disappointed with the left, disappointed with the left, which had spoiled what they viewed as a kind of social democratic party. They saw the Democratic Party as the vehicle for the United States to become kind of a social democratic society, even though it was a Democratic Party based in the white South, and a Democratic Party that had, until the black movement arose, resisted the demands of blacks for incorporation and full voting rights.
In your latest Tom Dispatch article, if we could move to that, you do present a lot of statistics to illustrate the widening income gap in the United States. I'd also like to hear more about, over the years, as you've worked with the issues of poverty, how has our understanding of poverty changed in this country over time? And also, how has our perception of the poor and working class changed?
Well, it's changed dramatically, but it doesn't change in a kind of straight line. It isn't an evolutionary process. It's the conception of why people are poor and the depictions of the poor, their habits, their character, their efforts. This changes in relation to our politics when conservatives or the right wing are in command. The poor are very likely to become a kind of despised, marginalized minority. And the dominant characterizations of the poor then are the ones that we've seen develop over the last 30 years. People are poor because they have bad character, because they have criminal inclinations. They are poor because they are promiscuous. They are poor because, and here's a word that's gotten a lot of attention lately, they are poor because they are dependent. And all of our efforts to help them, the argument goes, only encourage that dependency. So as a consequence of giving people some cash assistance or some food stamps or unemployment benefits. They, in fact, in a deep sense, become poorer still because that spoils their character. So that's the view that has been put forward by the right-wing propaganda machine in a kind of relentless way for, I think, 30 or 40 years. But we have to also remember that before that, there was a period when we had some political leaders who encouraged the public to sort of reach out to the poor, to concern themselves with the poor. There was a period of time in the 1960s when there were posters of impoverished women surrounded by children, trying to help their children, when the President of the United States echoed the words of the civil rights movement, "We shall overcome," and launched a war on poverty. So now why was that? That was because he was responding to a movement of people, of African Americans mainly, and also poor people in the cities of the North, a movement that was making demands and that was threatening to divide the Democratic Party. So when the poor are on the march and when other Americans respond to their demands and their eloquent depictions of what it's like to be stigmatized, marginalized, spat upon, when the poor have allies, then our conception of why people are poor, what we can do about it, is likely to be transformed. The last 30, 40 years have been miserable times from that perspective in the United States. We've seen a kind of blanket of propaganda that has encouraged our meanest and cruelest instincts.
And from that historical perspective, what do you make of the current Occupy Wall Street movement?
Well, I think it's very promising. I think that the largely young people who have been attracted to Occupy Wall Street have, in a way, I don't exactly know why, maybe it's their own youth subculture, they've been spared some of the meanness and nastiness that has dominated American political discourse with regard to poor people, with regard to minorities, with regard to also cultural minorities. So they're really kind of open-minded and generous of spirit. That spirit was very apparent in the 2008 campaign, for example. And so, you know, on the one hand, they have made the issue of extreme inequality a very big central issue in American political discussion. It should be a central issue because we have become so unequal. But the propaganda machine really, I think, turned popular attention away from that issue. And now Occupy Wall Street is featuring extreme inequality. They're putting the spotlight on the financiers who are responsible for many of the policies which are producing inequality. This is on the one hand. On the other hand, they welcome to their occupations the people who are homeless, the people who don't have enough to eat. Maybe we are changing again in the United States. And if we are, I think we have Occupy Wall Street to thank for it.
To read Francis Fox Piven's latest article, "The War Against the Poor, Occupy Wall Street and the Politics of Financial Morality," please visit tomdispatch.com. You can also find Piven's latest book, "Who's Afraid of Francis Fox Piven? The Essential Writers of the Professor Glenn Beck Loves to Hate," at amazon.com or at any quality bookstore near you. I'm Timothy McBain, and until we meet again, thanks for listening.